Ever wonder if, like, a radio station could actually be held responsible for somebody's death? You might be surprised.
Yeah.
Today's deep dive, it takes us into a landmark legal case
Okay.
from 1975
All right.
that really kind of changed how we think about media responsibility
Okay.
and promotional contests.
Interesting.
We're looking at the case Wirum v. RKO General Inc., a case that still has a huge impact on the legal world today.
Wow. So what makes this case so fascinating is that it forces us to think about, this fundamental question. Can a company be held liable for the actions of its audience?
Especially when those actions result in harm.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's rewind back to the summer of 1970. We're in Los Angeles.
All right.
KHJ Radio, a station really popular with teens,
Yeah.
launches this contest called the Super Summer Spectacular.
Okay.
They've got their DJ, Donald Steele, driving around in a red car, broadcasting clues about his location. First listener to find him wins a cash prize. Seems harmless enough, right?
Well, the court ultimately disagreed, and the reason why is because KHJ's target demographic was teenagers. Teenagers are statistically more likely to engage in risky driving behavior,
Yeah.
and by creating a contest that incentivized speed and reckless driving, they basically created an environment where tragedy was almost predictable.
And tragedy did strike. Two teenage listeners, Robert Centner and Marsha Bame, got caught up in this frenzy. They were speeding, weaving in and out of traffic, desperate to win. In
Oh.
a horrible turn of events, they forced Ronald Wirum's car off the road.
Oh no.
And this led to a fatal accident.
That's awful. It's a heartbreaking reminder that, even seemingly harmless entertainment can have devastating consequences.
Yeah.
And in this case, the court decided that KHJ couldn't just shrug off responsibility.
So Wirum's family, understandably devastated, sued not only the teenage drivers, but also KHJ's parent company, RKO General.
Right.
The jury found both KHJ and the surviving teen driver liable, awarding Wirum's family $300,000, which is over $1.6 million in today's money. But KHJ wasn't going down without a fight, so they appealed the verdict, claiming they had no legal duty to protect Wirum from the actions of third parties.
Right. And they even went so far as to argue that their First Amendment rights were being violated, that holding them accountable for a contest promoting free speech was setting a dangerous precedent.
Yeah.
And this is where things get really interesting, legally speaking, because the court had to weigh, the right to free speech against the responsibility to protect public safety.
It's a classic legal dilemma, isn't it?
It is.
Freedom of speech versus the potential for harm. So, how did the court reconcile these competing interests?
Well, the California Supreme Court ultimately sided with the Wirum family, but their decision really wasn't about limiting free speech.
Right.
It was about recognizing that even protected speech comes with a responsibility to consider the potential consequences.
So they basically said you can't just shout fire in a crowded theater. Even if you're not directly causing harm, you can be held responsible for creating a situation that makes harm foreseeable.
Exactly. And that's the key legal concept here, foreseeability. The court found that KHJ, given their target audience and the nature of the contest, should have been able to predict that reckless driving was a likely outcome.
Right.
It's like setting up a domino chain and acting surprised when the last domino falls.
KHJ tried to argue they couldn't control how the teens drove, so how could they be held responsible?
Right.
But the court wasn't buying it.
No, they weren't. And this is where another crucial legal concept comes in, proximate cause. The court determined that the contest itself, with its inherent incentives and appeal to a thrill-seeking audience, was the driving force behind the tragic events.
Right.
It wasn't just about controlling the teens' every action. It was about acknowledging that the contest created a dangerous environment that made those reckless decisions far more likely.
So the court essentially said the KHJ lit the fuse, even if they didn't directly light the dynamite.
Right.
They created the context that led to the tragedy, and that's what made them liable. It's a powerful statement about the responsibility that comes with having a platform and an audience.
Absolutely. And what's even more striking is that the court rejected KHJ's argument that they had no prior incidents to warn them of the potential dangers.
Yeah.
They said that common sense and a basic knowledge of human behavior should have been enough to make the risks clear.
It's like claiming that playing with fire is safe until you actually get burned.
Exactly.
The potential for harm was inherent in the situation itself. And this leads us to another crucial aspect of the court's reasoning, the idea that public safety trumps commercial gain.
Yes, the court sent a very clear message. You can't prioritize profit over the safety of your audience, even if what you're doing is entertaining or commercially successful.
Right.
Justice Moss, who wrote the court's opinion, captured this sentiment perfectly when he said, The risk of a high-speed automobile chase is the risk of death or serious injury. Neither the entertainment afforded by the contest nor its commercial rewards can justify the creation of such a grave risk.
Wow, that's powerful. It really highlights the court's stance that some things are simply too dangerous to justify, regardless of potential profits or entertainment value.
Precisely. The court drew a very firm line in the sand, asserting that freedom of speech does not give companies a free pass to endanger the public.
So we've established that Whedon v. RKO was a groundbreaking case that set a significant precedent. But how does this 1975 case relate to our world today, a world dominated by social media and online content creators? We'll delve into those connections and explore the case's lasting legacy when we return for part two of our deep dive.
Sounds good. Welcome back to our deep dive into this landmark case, Whedon v. RKO General, Inc. You know, as we discussed in part one, this case set this powerful precedent holding this radio station accountable for the tragic consequences of their contest. But here's the question that keeps coming up for me. Does this 1975 ruling still have teeth in today's world, where social media and online platforms have become like the new arenas for potentially dangerous trends and challenges?
It's a fascinating parallel, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, think about all the viral challenges that we see popping up all the time.
Yeah.
Often encouraging risky or even downright dangerous behavior.
Yeah.
Just like the Whedon case, many of these challenges are aimed at a young, very easily influenced audience.
Right. It makes you wonder, could like a company or an individual with a huge online following be held liable for a dangerous trend that they start, even if they don't directly control what their followers do?
So let's say like a social media influencer with millions of followers starts this challenge.
Yeah.
That involves doing backflips off of high places.
Oh, wow.
And somebody gets seriously hurt. Could that influencer be held responsible even if they put a disclaimer saying, don't try this at home?
It's certainly possible. While the legal landscape has definitely evolved since 1975 and social media presents some unique challenges, the core principles of foreseeability and duty of care established in Whedon are still very much relevant today.
So even if the influencer didn't explicitly tell their followers to jump off a building, the court might still consider whether they should have reasonably anticipated that their challenge could lead to dangerous copycat behavior.
Exactly. The court would likely look at a few factors, including the influencer's intent, the nature of the challenge itself, the clarity of any warnings or disclaimers, and of course, the foreseeability of harm. Did the influencer, in creating and promoting this challenge, did they create an environment where harm was a likely outcome? That's the question.
It seems like a little bit of a tightrope walk, though.
Yeah.
Where do you draw the line between encouraging creativity and expression and being responsible for the actions of your audience, especially in a digital world where things can go viral so quickly?
It's definitely a complex issue, and there's really no easy answer.
Right.
Courts today are still grappling with these questions.
Yeah.
But I think Whedon provides a valuable framework for approaching these kinds of dilemmas.
Yeah. It's almost like a cautionary tale for anyone with a platform and a following.
Right.
Reminding us that with influence comes responsibility.
Exactly.
Whether you're a radio station in the 1970s or a social media star in the 2020s, you can't just ignore the potential consequences of your content.
Yeah.
Even if it's intended as entertainment.
Right, and that's a key takeaway here. But the impact of Whedon goes way beyond just social media.
Okay.
This case has had a ripple effect across the legal landscape.
Really? Tell me more about that. Has it been cited in other cases?
Oh, yeah. It's been cited in hundreds of cases, not just in California, but all across the country.
Wow.
And its principles have been applied to a really wide range of situations, from product liability cases to premises liability cases involving negligent security.
So it's not just about media companies and influencers. It's about a broader understanding of duty and responsibility.
Precisely. Whedon provides this roadmap for lawyers in cases where a third party's negligence contributes to the harm.
Okay.
It really emphasizes the importance of establishing that foreseeability, showing a clear link between the defendant's actions and the harm that occurred, and demonstrating that the defendant should have reasonably anticipated the dangers involved.
So it's not just about proving that the defendant directly caused the harm.
Right.
It's about showing that they created an environment or set in motion a chain of events that made that harm more likely.
Exactly. And remember how the court emphasized the importance of considering the characteristics of the target audience in Whedon.
Right, because teenagers are statistically more likely to drive recklessly.
Right. That factor played a key role in the court's decision. And today, lawyers can use Whedon to argue that companies have a duty to consider the unique characteristics and potential vulnerabilities of their target audience when designing products, services, or marketing campaigns.
It's fascinating how one case about a radio contest has had such a significant and lasting impact on legal precedent.
Yeah.
It makes you realize that the law is constantly evolving and adapting to these new situations and technologies.
Absolutely. And I think Wildham highlights a crucial point. The law isn't just a set of static rules. It's this dynamic system that reflects our changing society and the challenges we face.
So how has Wildham specifically shaped our understanding of media liability? And what key takeaways should our listeners, particularly those in the legal profession, keep in mind? We'll explore these questions as we wrap up our deep dive into this landmark case in Part 3. Welcome back to the final part of our deep dive into Wildham v. RKO General, Inc. We've uncovered the pretty gripping details of this 1975 case and explored its impact on media liability and even considered its relevance in today's digital age.
It's really quite remarkable how a seemingly simple radio contest sparked a legal debate that continues to shape how we think about responsibility, foreseeability, and that delicate balance between free speech and public safety.
So as we wrap up our exploration of Wildham v. RKO, what are the key takeaways here? Why should this case still matter to our listeners, especially those in the legal field?
Well, I think Wildham serves as kind of a stark reminder that legal precedent can emerge from the most unexpected places. You know, a tragic accident stemming from a radio contest helped to redefine how we understand a company's duty of care, particularly in the context of media and entertainment.
It's a powerful illustration of how actions intended for entertainment or commercial gain can have serious unintended consequences. It's not enough to simply say, we didn't mean for anyone to get hurt. The court in Wildham made it clear that you have to consider the potential for harm, especially when you have a platform that amplifies your reach.
Precisely. And Wildham highlights the importance of thinking about not just the immediate impact of our actions, but also the potential ripple effects. Whether you're a company, an individual with a large online following, or just someone expressing themselves online, it's crucial to consider how your words and actions might influence others.
It's like that butterfly effect idea, right? One seemingly small action can set off a chain of events with far-reaching consequences. And Wildham also underscores the importance of understanding and applying fundamental legal principles like foreseeability and proximate cause. These concepts might seem complex, but they're essential tools for lawyers in a wide range of cases.
Absolutely. Wildham shows us that establishing liability isn't always about proving a direct one-to-one causal link. It's often about demonstrating that a defendant created a situation that made harm more likely, even if they didn't directly control the actions of the person who ultimately caused the harm.
So in a way, it's about connecting the dots between actions and consequences, showing how a defendant's actions set the stage for harm, even if there were intervening factors.
Exactly. And for legal professionals, Wildham offers valuable guidance on how to build a persuasive case in situations where third-party negligence is a factor. It shows how to use evidence effectively to establish foreseeability, connect the dots between actions and consequences, and ultimately convince a court that a defendant should be held accountable, even if others were also involved.
It sounds like Wildham v. RKO is a case that every lawyer, especially those dealing with media law, personal injury, or even product liability, should have in their legal toolkit.
I completely agree. It's a landmark case that offers crucial insights into duty, responsibility, and the evolving nature of the law itself.
But beyond the legal implications, Wildham also offers a broader societal lesson. As our media landscape evolves and new platforms emerge, it's more important than ever to think critically about the potential consequences of our actions, both online and offline. What we say and do can have an impact far beyond our immediate circle.
That's a powerful point. And as we navigate this ever-changing world of information and influence, Wildham v. RKO General, Inc. serves as a vital reminder that with great influence comes great responsibility.
So before we sign off, I want to leave our listeners with one final thought-provoking question. In today's world of instant communication and viral trends, where do we draw the line between creative freedom and public safety? How do we balance engaging content with the responsibility to avoid potentially harmful influence?
That's a question we all need to grapple with, not just legal professionals. As we move forward in this complex and interconnected world, Wildham stands as a powerful reminder that our actions have consequences, and that we all share a responsibility for creating a safer and more thoughtful media landscape.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into a truly fascinating case. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.